Hello, welcome to the Tuesday Night Discussion Group. This is April the 29th, 2014. We'll be discussing the book that I wrote, Eric Kirby Watson and Walter Oleski, God Does Not Want You to Be in Pain. We discussed the chapters 3 this week. The name of my chapter is Eric's journey, acceptance, awareness, mindfulness, knowledge, stressors, and physical activity. And then in Walt's chapter 3, it'll be called The Good Old Days. And we have been getting into a lot of different subjects pertaining to TMS knowledge healing therapy, or as Dr. Sorrell calls it, the TMS knowledge penicillin that we all do need to get. Is these little lessons that come through these great books we read, and these chapters from sentence to sentence, you get all these lessons, and we've been getting them every week. But anyway, that should be a wrap on that. I do need to give the disclaimer before we start. I do need to let everyone know that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. If you have a medical concern, you should see a properly licensed physician or a TMS physician, as we like to say. Now, with that being said, Bruce is going to give the summary.
Well, I think in lieu of we'll bow to Walt's bedtime, and we should probably start with Walt's journey 2 in this case. I think it's probably 3.
It's called The Good Old Days.
Yeah, it's Journaling 1. It's called The Good Old Days. And ostensibly, this chapter is about journaling, which is one of the techniques used to access and process repressed emotions. But it also provides a jumping-off point for Walt's story about his life in Chicago as a child in the late 1930s. And the journaling part of it is pretty simple. Walt says the best time to journal each day is when you have completed the 12 daily reminders, the ones in Dr. Sarno's healing back pain. And it's occurs in Dr. Sarno's book, Scott Brady's book, Steve Ozanich's book, and also on the free TMS Wiki site. Website that we, of course, are all part of. And I believe Sarno suggests setting aside about 20 minutes each day for journaling, and put a date on each entry. And Walt and Eric both believe it can be very helpful to you and others. If we tell what they were in our lives, it can get rather personal, and that's the nature of this chapter itself. And some people suggest categorizing the entries in your journal one day about your past, another day about current circumstances, and a third day about your personality traits, which can cause TMS symptoms, such as anger, fear, guilt, or worry. But Walt says he prefers to skip around and, I guess, a free associational approach rather than something really structured. Although I think these three categories, I think, were first given by Dr. Sarno in The Divided Mind, where he outlines the program for journaling. And that's... your current circumstances that are stressing you, and then your past history. I guess Sarno talks about your childhood and adolescence, and a third about personality traits such as perfectionism and so on. But this chapter provides Walt with an opportunity to chronicle his experience as a child in the 1930s, and this book reminded me of another book, of course. One book always reminds you of another book. It reminds me of Studs Terkel's book, that famous book of his called Hard Times, an oral history of the Great Depression. because
I knew Studs. I knew Studs real well.
Yeah, yeah. He
You knew Studs Terkel? Sorry to interrupt.
Oh yeah, we used to go to plays together.
You knew Studs Terkel. That's pretty amazing. He's a literary figure.
Yeah, he made a career out of promoting himself. He blew his own horn so much that everybody knew about him. I've kept a very low profile. I've had 50 books published, and nobody in Chicago knows I exist. And I love it that way. I don't need limelight. I don't have an ego that wants that. But he had a huge ego.
He sure did.
He did a good job. He wrote some good books, but he was a big self-promoter. I just don't go in that direction.
Sometimes that's where the sales come from, but I hear you. Bruce, yeah. Sorry for interrupting.
You lose your privacy. I love my privacy.
Well, yeah, he also wrote, Studs also wrote The Good War, which is probably even
worse. World War II. He just went around getting everybody's memories.
Yeah, he's like one of the few people who actually went down to the grassroots common people and got their opinions about things on the ground.
He wrote about the war and the Great Depression.
Yeah, and the way people reacted at the grassroots. And, it's very interesting in this chapter how much the 30s generation referenced themselves to movie actors and actresses. Very much like my late father, who had an extensive collection of movie books that I, of course, inherited in this very house. The house is full of movie books. And it's interesting how Walt says that his mom looked like Frances D.
Joel McCrae's wife.
Very beautiful actress. And
Joel McCrae's wife.
Yeah, right. They had a long marriage. I went wikiing around and looked at these people.
Yeah.
And your father looked like George O'Brien.
He wrote a lot of westerns.
Yeah, and they were two very handsome people, and yet they were thrust into very hard circumstances by the economy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very interesting that in the Kindle version on L2.19, Steve talks about the primary role of financial worry in creating lower back pain. I wouldn't think he would say
Steve
that.
He calls it debt stress.
Debt stress, yes, that was the word. I thought that was very good.
And it's true. I think I still carry that around. We were poor. We lived off of government truck came every month with potatoes and prunes and oatmeal, stuff like that. But we were no different than anybody else in the neighborhood.
But I was coming into consciousness on the tail end of that, and of course I was indoctrinated in that 30s mentality by my parents, and my father still took me to the movies downtown all the time, and he had all of these picture books of Stan Laurel and his personal favorite Charlie Chaplin. And Douglas Fairbanks, all of the books are lining the walls here. And then he had all of those famous movie catalogs where everything you needed to know about the movies. And
that was our escape. We got away from our apartments and the rest of it, and we went to the movies got a different perspective on how people lived and good stories, and it just took us away for a while. I think I also learned a lot of history from going to the movies. Back then, they used to make a lot of movies that were about Africa, India, France, Germany, Paris, and they may not have been filmed there, but they showed what those countries looked like, and we learned a little of their history. I think I learned about as much from the movies about history as I did in school. But they don't make movies like that anymore.
Yeah, you remember the Pathé newsreels. My father used to
take
me to them in the
50s.
And that would have a lot about faraway places. And I know the reason my father used to hang out in the movies in the 30s was because they had free lunches to entice people to come in for whatever the movies cost then, 25 cents.
I never went to a theater that gave me a free candy bar, much less a lunch or anything.
Well, this was, this was the coast, too. This was after the war began.
Really?
Yeah, this was like, this was post-war. During the war and afterwards, it was much more spelt on the West Coast. The working people came out here and went to work in the shipyards, so they were making a lot of money that they didn't make in the Midwest.
Different style.
Yeah, I think that, they all came from the Midwest out here because there was money and work here, very much the people coming to the Silicon Valley. There were 300,000 people working in the shipyards in World War II. There are now 300,000 people working in the Silicon Valley. The same kind of principle, but with a different geometry, of course, economically. But, it's like a shipyard worker in 1944 in San Francisco made $5,000. And an average worker in the Silicon Valley makes $95,000. But the whole thing is that in those days, a $5,000 salary would buy you the equivalent of $1 million house here today in 1 year. So it was very much a boom town. But I think the crux of all of this, the central passage in this book is where Steve talks to you and advises you. You ask the question, did living with roaches and rodents and forefathers and divorces and family financial troubles give me stress and pain? Well, you don't answer it, but Steve does. After I wrote about my boyhood memories on the web, Steve Ozanich posted this to me. You had a perfect storm childhood for TMS. One thing for sure, you probably did stay a bachelor because of all those failed marriages and relationship separation anxieties. The adult screens all relationships through the eyes of the child's experiences of happiness or pain.
I want to interrupt. My experiences are not unique. A lot of people grew up with divorce in the family, with hard times financial. I just wrote about mine, hoping that it would trigger people to remember their childhood that might have had similar situations, and they can feel like, well, they might remember repressed emotions that can help them. And my chapters are really kind of personal, but they're a springboard to other people to reflect on similar situations. Our stresses come along, from our childhood in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what you've seen as a child. What is that that Wordsworth says, the English poet? A child is father to the man. And, yeah, very much
so. Well, that's very perceptive, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Wordsworth saw a lot of things very early on.
Nice to read if he wrote in more detail about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he did, but maybe in his biography.
The prelude is the place to look for it.
We would learn where that, where he brought that up from. And it must have come from childhood experiences that he had. And,
well, you see your family in this chapter making do with financially straitened circumstances. And you see the relationship between your mother and father rising and falling with these various economic setbacks and just paying the bills for the apartment, not being able to.
Well, we moved every year or two, and I didn't know why, because we moved into a different apartment, but it all looked the same. It was all pretty much in the same neighborhood, a couple of, you know, a few blocks away. And years later, when we were both grown, I asked my brother, why did we move so much? And he said, we couldn't pay the rent. As cheap as the rent was, you know, like $10 a month to, back then, it might, that's the equivalent of a, maybe $50 or $100 today, but we just didn't have that kind of money. But anyway, also, the hard times of the good old days of the Great Depression in the 1930s, they're back again. We're living in the second Great Depression, except the media will not recognize that. The politicians will not allow us to know how bad things are for a lot of people, and a lot of people have TMS because of it. So my chapter is just to say, hey, we survived it, and you got to have faith that you're going to survive your hard times.
What Steve says about the financial roots or causes of TMS reminded me of my family's own hardships back in the 50s, because they were going along very well when the shipyards were open. And then in 1955, after the Korean War ended, that's when Mom and Dad started having big fights. And that's also when the shipyard shut down. And that's also when they tried to get divorced. And Grandpa came out of the closet, came down from heaven with money to for a down payment on a house in San Mateo. And we moved down here where there was lots of construction going on with the GI Bill and FHA home loans. And then toward the end of the 50s, Mom and Dad started to fight. And I didn't think about it till I read your chapter. What happened in 57? The Eisenhower recession. That's when the economy started to tank. And then they separated, and then it started to get better when Kennedy came in. And you can see how the relationships rise and fall on the waves, various waves of the economy. And that's very apparent, Walt, in this chapter of yours, because I had this stuff handed on to me secondhand. I was indoctrinated in this point of view where you get by. It's like your mother married the guy she met in a bar because he had a house. This is when
that's
it
right.
gets down to basics, you know. Yeah. Romance goes out the window at that point. That's a luxury.
She was looking after us three kids.
The family.
She needs a place for us to live, and this provided it. It only lasted a year. She couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
She used to tell us that she needed a couple of shots of bourbon before she'd go to bed with the guy.
Yeah, and then, of course, he was jealous of you and the other kids and didn't treat you very well. And
His sister was Cruella de Vil. she was a tough, mean lady.
But I thought it was also interesting the way your dad belittled you, your real dad.
I don't understand why he did that.
Well, if you
his
read
friends
in
would
Dr.
be over and they'd be drinking beer in the kitchen, and I'd walk in, and I don't know exactly how he belittled me, but he kept putting me down, making fun of me, and I thought, what the heck is that all about? I love you, Dad. Why are you doing this to me?
My dad
hurt.
Did exactly the same things. It's because I threatened him with my intellect. I could talk back, and it made
it might have been that for me, but I think what helped me was journaling about that. Made me think he had his own TMS, and he took it out on the innocent person in the room. That was me.
And he had
thank you for bringing that back, because that is where we want to go. We want to get back to stuff which applies to everyone. I think
absolutely.
And so
I've been trying to do that for half hour. We've got to keep on the subject of the book, not everybody else's additions.
That's
and I think Herbie's chapters are so full of healing techniques, we ought to go to his now.
Okay, well, is there anything else you wanted to add about your chapter? Or did we pretty much hit
no,
it?
I think
shall we go to Herbie's?
We pretty much covered. There's a lot more in there, but we can't spend the whole time on it.
I think that's a good point. We want to be prompt and we want to move things along. Does anyone object to moving it along, folks?
Anybody want to ask me anything?
That is a great question. Does anyone on the phone have a question for Walt?
Don't be shy.
Yeah.
We won't get personal if you don't want to. Okay,
yeah. One thing which struck me was just the way that, I mean, I think that a lot of people, a lot of fathers especially, maybe don't think about the impact that they have on their kids.
Right.
And I just wanted to emphasize that.
That's
I thought
right.
that it was special the way that you could, you know, it feels like you're still struggling with that, but you didn't let it hurt you. And I don't know. I don't know what's magic.
When I started to think that my dad probably was just taking his own frustrations out, and I was the one that he took it out on. And I think that's true of a lot of people with their parents or their siblings. Why are they beating up on me? You know, why are they so mean to me? It may have nothing to do with you. It's just that they have, you know, worries and stresses they're trying to deal with, and they just take it out on you.
I think that positive attitude is so important, something really I admire.
And it was the German.
And you'll see them differently.
And it was the German, Walt. When you started doing the German, that you started understanding these repressions.
Yeah.
What did bother you?
I never gave it a thought. I suppressed it all.
Yeah.
And then I wrote about it, and I thought, by golly, there was a lot there that gave me anger.
Yeah, so the contents of this chapter really amount to the contents of your journaling, and this is really new material for you that you had not confronted. That gave you some insight into the origins of your TMS.
I even discovered why my brother was so mean to me.
Huh.
I realized that he was 4 years older than me, 3 years older than my sister, and my folks both worked, and so they had him look after us. But he was, you know, 3-4 years older. He wanted to be playing with his buddies. But he had a, you know, with one eye on us, he was playing with his buddies. And he did look after us, but I think he felt he was deprived of his childhood. And so that angered him, and he took it out on me. Oh, he also took it out on my sister, too. But she was faster, and she'd run into the bathroom and lock the door. And he would pound on the door, and then she'd say, "Don't come in, don't hurt me, Johnny, don't hurt me." And then he said, and then he was so mad he tore the door off the hinges. And she went cowering in the shower in the bathroom. And he said, "No, I'm not going to hurt you." And he said, "I took out my anger tearing the door down. Now," he said, "I got to put it back up before Mom gets home from work."
Well, when you journaled about all of this, did you feel the emotions come back?
Oh,
come
God,
back
yeah, I still feel it now.
Yeah. Okay, but you've accepted it, right? You accepted it, faced it.
Well, there was nothing else I could do.
Well, that's basically...
I did get back at my brother once. He told me, "You take out the garbage." And I said, "No, that's your job, Johnny." I said, "My job is to take out the ashes from the coal stove." And he said, "Well, while you're taking the garbage out to the alley, take the ashes out too." And I said, "No." And so he said, "If you don't, I'll break Mom's new broom over your back." I said, "You wouldn't dare." And after he broke the broom over my back, I picked up an ashtray that was stood on a wooden ashtray that stood up at chair level from the ground, and I broke it over one of his legs.
That sounds like one of my wrestling matches. What was y'all doing back then?
Then I thought he'd kill me for doing that, and he said, "Oh my God," he said, "Mom's coming home from work any minute. You go to the grocery store and get a new broom, put it on the cuff, you know, you charge it, and get a new broom, and I'm going to try to repair the ash stand with, so he did, with bandages and green crayon. It was a green wooden table, ash stand. And when Mom got home, she looked around the room, the apartment, quickly, as she always did, and she said, how come we have a new broom? She had eyes that could see everything. And she said, you guys got in a fight and broke the broom, didn't you, because you got a new broom. But she didn't see the ashtray because she didn't smoke. Anyways, those were the good old days.
Here's a TMS question, Walt. What do you think the effect of that fire at the, it was a Catholic school? You saw the burned corpses of the children.
I saw stuff that you wouldn't ever want your worst friend to see.
Yeah, I know about riding the meat wagons.
It was tough. It was tough to witness.
But what
I repressed it. I 2 days later, I got to work at the Tribune, and I was I was in a whole new world of reporting then. A lot to take my mind off of it. And no one talked about that fire afterward. Mm-hmm. So it was I don't know if I intentionally repressed those memories or I got so busy that I didn't even have time to think about it. But when it was happening, that was tough. A reporter gets to see an awful lot of life that he'd rather not see.
Mm-hmm.
I got tired of covering crime and violence, and I left the newspaper business and went into magazine writing and then writing books on positive subjects.
You know, I'm going to say I think there is something to be said for, there's some things that we aren't necessarily ready to process. I don't think we all have to always have to process it all at once. If something really does disturb us, I think it can be healthy. And I think, you know, the fact that you're such a positive individual is testament to that, you know, you're able to hold up for all that stuff. You didn't let it weigh you down. I think there's something positive to that, too.
That's one of the things I write about in my chapter 3, is about, you know, how we don't have to get right at that main repressed emotion or that most terrible time, the most terriblest time of your life. You can just hit around the emotions that you're having. You know, you don't have to delve right in there and go for the jugular right off the bat. Get used to it. Let yourself learn the ropes and stuff, you know. And even then, you don't have to go for that one specific repression that everybody's looking for, you know. Get all the stuff like Dr. Sarnold says, you know. Get all the current pressures. Look at, you know, the past pressures that's still bothering you now. You know, it's still current, still in the now. And you can find a lot of stuff right there, right, Walt? You there, buddy?
Yeah, Herbie, why don't you take over now?
Well, this provides a perfect bridge to Eric's chapter, Eric's Journey, Chapter 3. Which is subtitled Acceptance, Awareness, Mindfulness, Knowledge, Stressors, and Physical Activity. Well, there was a previous chapter where Eric underwent a injury that kept him out of football. Well, this chapter is about another injury that kept him from following through with his planned career as a professional wrestler. And again, in both cases, both the football, staying out of football and not following through with being a wrestler, the culprit was TMS, admittedly. Walt mentions it. Eric was working 8-to-5 roofing to help Mom and pay the bills. But drinking to dull the pain. At night he was cracking the books, studying martial arts and psychology. He had goals to be a professional counselor, physical trainer, or a pro wrestler. This accident occurred out on the lawn when he was going through a demonstration of various pro wrestling techniques where you aren't hurt necessarily.
It's like the part where you get right there, right at the moment that you're fixing to have your big break. You know, it's right at the moment you're fixing to have your big break, and then all of a sudden you get hurt, and it keeps you out of, you know, whatever career that is that you was wanting to go into. It was your heart's dream. And what I didn't realize at the time, Bruce, was that it was just another case of TMS, you know, coming in and stopping me. And it was, the TMS was, you know, working through fear of what might happen while I'm hurt, you know, in here doing professional wrestling. So, yeah, it had its time to stop me again. You know, when I look back and I realized that all this had happened, that's when I said, hey, I've got to write about every bit of this. Because this has been happening to me since I was just a child. You know, it's been happening to me my whole life. And
yeah,
I got
it seems
all these
like
times.
Just before you're going to get your big break, TMS rears its ugly head, and it appears to be a real physical incident, but in fact, it's a psychogenic manifestation of repressed emotionality. Probably when you're standing right on the edge of winning, getting in the winner's circle, then all of this repressed material starts to rise up.
Yeah.
It gets to be too much, and then you have pain. And it
even though I was picked up and slammed on my back, the thing was, I'd been slammed like that probably, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 times. So my body was callous to it. I was all used to it. So what was it that made this pain come on me just out of the blue? My body wasn't twisted like when I was 15 at this point. This is another injury we're talking about, right? And my body wasn't twisted. It was just it was a normal fall. It was a normal drop that you learn how to do when you become a wrestler. You learn how to fall. Some of those falls hurt, but most of them you already know how to do it, and it really doesn't hurt you that bad when you know how to fall right.
It reminded me very much of my relapse in 2008 when I was out running, but under a whole lot of stress from different, just finishing a book, engaged in a ridiculous relationship, a one-sided relationship, trying to make things work really hard. And then I take a fall out running and land on my butt. And I didn't think anything about it. I got up and I ran home. Oh, perfectly normal for a mile and a half. I said, oh, I'm okay. I just skinned my knee. Mm-hmm. Then over the next 6 weeks, the whole left leg where I'd taken the impact gradually tingled more and more and hurt more and more till I couldn't stand on it. Obviously, if I knew what I do now, I'd say trigger.
Yes.
It was so obvious. And the same with you in this backyard thing. And one thing I noticed about it was the same arena where you had gotten hurt before, out on the front lawn of your parents' house with your brother, the same kind of psychodynamics. And the same characters.
Yes.
It's like you were playing a chess game out there with your mind.
Well, I was already being conditioned at that time. In my mind, I was already being conditioned that, you know, we get these belief systems. And we believe them and we can. And it was, the conditioning was, every time I get close to something that I want to accomplish, I fail. That was the belief, you know. But the TMS was working great. You know, the TMS was working through the fear, through the thoughts that, hey, what if this pain was to come back on me like it was before, right here before I get my big break? And guess what happens? That's exactly what happened, because my mind is conditioned, you know, it's somehow in type of agreement with this TMS mechanism that knows when you have emotional distress, that knows when you have these emotions going, if it's fear, whatever these emotions, these negative emotions can be.
So returning to full physical activity is really to undo the process of TMS. You say that physical activity is really to show yourself that you're really not physically broken and build your confidence. In other words, it's to refute everything that you're putting on yourself that's causing the pain to manifest. And the only way to get the pain to subside, you say, is 12 daily reminders and, of course, your own system of reframing and belief.
And yeah, the best way was when I got healed again at 40 years old. And that was when I learned that Dr. Sarno really, when he said, you know, it's the knowledge penicillin. It's what you're learning that's going to heal you. It's the mind that's going to heal you. It wasn't the exercise. You couldn't have told me that when I was 30 years old and got better. I thought it was the exercise. But come to find out, I had applied the same ruse at 30 years old and got better.
Yeah, you say that the more we fight to get anxieties and stressors out of our head, the more we are prolonging, not facing the issues at hand. That's very much like approaching TMS healing as physical exercise, like doing the PT route and stretching and so on. It's like you're fighting against it, but you're not dealing with the problem, with the underlying problem.
You have to face those those repressions, the things you didn't want to face. You have to look. You don't have to go for the jugular or nothing, but you do have to look at the repressions. You do have to look at what is it, not just the repressions, your negative reactions to things, which is basically unconscious actions. You do have to look at these. You have to look. What is it that's still bothering you that bothered you from 20 years ago, you know? It could still be going on in there, and you having all these triggers that's going off all the time, and you're unconscious to it. But then when you start facing it, when you really face it, instead of just saying, well, I took care of that, you know, you'll hear it a million times where somebody say, well, I forgive them, but I won't ever forget it. You know? Well, you know if they ain't ever going to forget it. Well, I don't know. I don't know if they really forgive them or not, but I know everybody I know doesn't really know how to release, you know, these negative emotions. They really don't know how to get them out or face it in a way that it can finally dispel this out of your mind and quit giving you so much tension. Basically, bring it to your consciousness that you're doing this so that you can learn to react in a better way than the way you've been reacting, right? The whole idea of learning thinking psychological is so we can start catching these current stressors, so that we can start catching our reactions that we don't even know we're doing, these negative reactions and so forth.
I think it's interesting the way you borrow a metaphor from your own experience in wrestling and apply it to the struggle against TMS. You say it's like a battle royale for almost every TMS person when they start to learn the program. Our battles are issues, almost anguish, always anger, anxiety, and usually both. We're usually running or trying to forget these dreadful, hurtful, and negative thoughts.
Yes.
We have to face them, change them, and accept them.
Those last couple of years when I realized I had TMS, that's when it got the worst. That's when I can't say that's when it's got the worst because I've been my whole life in pain, you know? But it was when I learned that I had TMS that I was in this fight. It was like the symptom imperative was going all over my body. It was in my shoulders. It was in my neck. It was in down my spine. It was in both legs. You know, if the ears had a bone, it probably would have been in an ear. But I did get the earaches and stuff like that. But I'm just saying, when I understood I was going to get in this and heal from TMS, that's also at the same time that as I always will remember, was one of my hardest battles. Because it was like it knew that I knew then. And when this mechanism knew that I knew, it was like it's on now. You know, the fight is on. The fight to soothe myself. The fight to get myself calm. The fight to watch my reactions. I even had that what you call the extinction burst, you know. And that was right after the pain had eventually left. And then all of a sudden I got this big bowl of anxiety. Like 100-time-fold just dropped on me, you know? It was like the TMS was fighting me with everything and the kitchen sink to hang on.
Dr. Sarno's book, The Divided Mind. Mm-hmm. When you start to operate on your own mind, it gets kind of subjective. I mean, it's not like you're fighting the objective other when you're fighting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When another aspect of your personality has become so powerful that it's hoodwinked you, it's fooled you into thinking it's something physical, it's something out there, when it, all along it was just you.
Yes, correct. It was my own thoughts, and I had to learn how to catch those, just as we call them, the current stressors, you know, the things I went through in the past. I had to learn them all, especially the negative reactions I would have towards, like being a goodist. I remember I was writing a post to somebody, and I think I said in there, thank you so many times, or some kind of, I think I put like five thank yous in the post. And a guy named Ace One, he came and he told me, over my email, he said, Eric, he said, don't be so, he said, don't take this wrong, but you're being so nice to people that it's going to backfire on you, and you're just now getting to the point that you're getting better, but you're not consciously realizing how much of a goodist you're really being, you see? In other words, it was at TMS Help, and there's some arguments that break out over there sometimes, you know? And he didn't want me to be in one of those, and I sure didn't want to be in one. But it would have led to one if Ace wouldn't have brought my mind to understand that I don't have to have everything perfect all the time no more. Everything doesn't have to be super great in order for me to be happy, you know? Because I was on that like 2 or 3 month phase where you start getting all better and stuff right before you have one of them fallbacks, you know? Mm-hmm. And he knew when I was going to get the pain, if the pain was going to come back on me, he didn't want me to be distraught because I was being too much of a goodist at the time.
Well, you talk earlier in a previous chapter about how you have to guard against people taking advantage of you, and you're self-conscious of that because of your goodest traits of being the big good guy.
In the past, up till about 35, yeah, I've always had a giving heart. I always will. You know, that's just part of my personality. And some parts of your personality, if you change them, it'll break you down even worse than the pain would. It would take your spirit away, you know? So there's a lot of parts that you still want to keep. There's parts of our personality traits that we do have to change. It's common sense that there is traits that we get, some that we do have to change. But there's other traits that make you who you are, you know? And that's a beautiful person. That's that one-of-a-kind person that nobody else can compete against. And that goodest part was one of those parts that was always was my stronghold. That's how I became a preacher at the age of 29 and so forth. It was because I always went out of my way to do the right thing, to help other people. But at the same time, I did have a lot of bad stuff happen to me. That's how I lost nearly $200,000, you know, on one business transaction, because I was the good guy, right? So you will have to eventually learn, you know, where you can be good and where you got to be stern at, you know?
But that's intrinsically enraging too, isn't it, being the
very
good guy?
Very enraging when you're trying to be the good person and you're doing everything you can to be the good guy, and then people take everything you've got, you know? Yeah, that was the leading up to the onset of the last TMS battle.
So that was the stressor that really brought it on.
The goodism was the goodism.
Yeah.
It was and it's a personality trait, you know? And so you're like, well, how am I going to change this? You know, this is a part of me. This is who I am, and I did try to change it momentarily. I did try to be a different person, but when I tried, Bruce, it made me miserable. It turned me into a miserable person, you know? So
you still gotta stay true to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of people who get used who are goodists like that, and then they turn into nasty McNasty for the rest of their life too when they go through that flip flop.
Yes.
So it isn't really productive to do that.
I think everybody needs to really keep their special traits. Keep the special traits. Right. You know, change the traits that might be harming you. But you got traits that only you got, that you was born with, and nobody else has them. And if they're special, don't try to change them. Just rework them in a way if you have to, you know? Like with the goodism, I had to rework it to just be more prudent, be more discerning with who I work with and who I deal with. You know, I had to go out there and retrain my whole way of looking at business and everything I do. Even though I've studied business all my life as much as I have psychology, I still, because of that goodest trait, I had to go and relearn a lot of, you know, business dealings.
Yeah, it brings up what Steve told Walt about behind lots of TMS are financial things, and losing $250,000 is a big kick in the teeth. I noticed when my mother died, and I lost a big contract, and I lost a bunch of money in the market, and people tried to take advantage of me too close together, all in the space of about 3 months. Bango. That's where I had a big back attack. And I didn't know it, of course. I wasn't conscious of this, but behind it was finances and security, just like Walt with the insecurity from the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
You poke a person economically and you get down to basics. You get down to the basic elements in their personality. What makes them think they're who they are?
Yes. It's a beautiful thing to keep the traits, but you know, that's one of the reasons we're told to work with our personality traits, is to find out which one's the bad ones, you know? Because everybody's got bad traits. But you're unconscious to it. You just don't know it until you... For myself, I journaled and I started paying attention through awareness at my reactions. And that's how I learned my negative personality traits. But little did I know, the biggest negative one was my most best one, too, which was, you know, being the goodest.
Yeah, that's the irony of that, too, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the thing that makes you... makes you yourself and makes you good is also your has the most opportunity for knocking you down.
It gave me a chance to go back in and restudy and relearn about business, what do you call it, discernmanship, prudence, being a prudent person. Even though I've always been that way, it gave me a chance to fix that side finally. So see, I got to fix something, you know, and that's the whole idea of healing from the TMS, on my part and on most everybody's part I see and that we have the TMS week and so forth, is there's always something that we need to mend, that we need to fix, you know, and one of those for me was that goodest part because there was a lot of things. I was a good person, but there's also a lot of things I expected back for being that good person that I shouldn't have been expecting back anything for being that good person, you know, because that was just more distressing.
And besides the 12 steps and acceptance and reprocessing and forgiveness and so on, you speak in this chapter about meditation as being one of the foundation stones of TMS healing.
Yeah, you know, when I mentioned about the foundation, about the meditation, about after you wake up, a lot of times I used to wake up and I would try to meditate maybe 5 minutes after I woke up. Well, that would just put me right back to sleep, Bruce.
Yeah.
I'd just go right back to sleep for us. You know, and then I'd wake up a little bit later and it was like I just hit the snooze button or something. I really didn't get the best out of it. So I kept looking for better meditations and I finally figured out if I would wait till I got fully awake and maybe do it an hour or two later, somewhere around right before lunch or right before noon, and then just lay there for like 20 minutes and meditate and relax and go through some mantras or affirmations while I was laying there and meditating. And I would get up in like 20 minutes and I would feel so refreshed and so revigorated, you know, after the initially like 7 days to get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night, you know, a lot of times you'll hear people say, well, meditate at night, you know, Well, I think you need to meditate several hours before you go to bed at night. Because if you just meditate at night, well, you're just going to go right to sleep. And then, you know, I learned another meditation that if you do it sometime in that afternoon, then you'll, again, be full of energy. You get rebalanced, you know. Meditation helps you get back balanced, right?
Yeah.
Calms, it does the soothing part. It does a lot of the soothing for you. And we know how powerful soothing is when it comes to sensitization, being nervous and the worriers and stuff. I heard somebody mention, I believe on the site today, that they couldn't get calm. They couldn't get their nervous system calm. And that's the way I felt when I first started doing my meditations and my mindfulness meditation and calming and soothing techniques. I thought I couldn't do it. And even though I had done meditation 100 or thousands of times before, I didn't do meditation on this level. This level to where I'm finally letting all the chatter go. I'm doing nothing but paying attention to my breathing. I'm doing nothing but letting my body be at peace and just calm down. Because every other time I ever meditated, there was always some type of mental chatter going on. When I wasn't supposed to be doing that, that was always one of the rules in meditation. Don't let that happen. And I would always break that rule. So that's a good rule not to break when you do meditation. And meditation is really great when it comes to the soothing factor.
Yeah, well, being able to detach from the mental chatter and not be hung up in it. I notice it'll go on, but I can actually pull back now and not pay attention to it. That takes quite a bit of learning. You give 8 steps for meditation here. I don't know what page. It's like location 1747 on the Kindle.
Okay.
And you say, meditated or very relaxed but not a sleep state for 30 minutes twice a day. Do it in the mid-morning and mid-afternoon, not right before or after sleep, just like you just said. And you say it's hard for people to truly relax during the day, myself included. You say that one thing that helped you was listening to MP3 music. And
yes.
Gradually, as you perfected the technique, you didn't need to do it anymore. And when you meditate, get an idea of what it is to feel like when you are healed. Try and visualize it, I guess,
yes.
Imagine it. And it says, you say the more time you spend in meditative state, the faster you will heal. And when you're having a hard time meditating because you're so hyperactive in your brain and in your body, it's very hard to do that.
All of the soothing techniques I did, all of the meditations, all the calming techniques, that really led to this next part. There's a little page there about an enlightenment, and I was out lifting weights. I think it's on the next page. And I started all of a sudden out of the blue. I just felt healing going through my whole body. Well, when that was happening, it was because of all the meditation I'd been doing. I mean, and all the reaction watch I'd been doing. I'd been doing, you know, controlling the thoughts and all of that leading up to 6 or 7 months at this time. So,
yeah, this is something you wrote to yourself in your journal, I guess, your meditating journal. You said, I just experienced euphoria while experiencing a complete mind-body-spirit felt sense. I was 100% in awareness, acceptance, meditation, optimism, affirmations, and visualization. I come to a place
experience.
Of healing where I felt like energy healing was being sent to my body, and it felt awesome. Now I want to say that I had this feeling right while I was working out, and then when I walked in my home and watched TV, this total healing feeling was just going through my whole body. It was like liquid love. Liquid healing was just flowing through me from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. This might sound a little crazy, says Eric, but this is true. This was happening while I was working out in nature outside and in the living room. You were carrying it around with you as an internal state. And this sounds very much like what Yeats was talking about when he was sitting in a a cafe in Dublin in the 20s, and he'd meditated all his life, trying to have a great revelation that was going to change everything. And then one afternoon it came to him, and he said, I was blessed, and I could bless, and I could bless. And it just happened for an hour sitting there in that cafe.
Yeah.
And it had never happened before, and it came out of the blue. And then Wordsworth says, Wordsworth talks about, whence fled that visionary gleam? He was out in a meadow, meditating, I guess. And he said, whence fled that hour of splendor in the grass? He remembered it all his life. It's like what you're talking about. That's the moment of moments. And that's what this is all headed for. Unity, unifying, reconciling the two halves of your brain.
I believe it's a beautiful experience. I don't know how many people experience it while they're going through TMS healing. I experienced it, I think, on three occasions. I write about it in here twice in this book. But I experienced it on three occasions. And this is where I can feel in my mind that this just this whole healing. Now, this is at the time my body was rehealing, okay? But I could feel in my mind from my head, and it would just like go through my shoulders. And it was, when I call it liquid love, Walt didn't want to write that in the book. He said it meant something else or whatever. But I told him, I said, this is the only way I know how to say it. We have to put this in there. But it's like in my mind, I was thinking, you know, I feel great. I feel perfect. And then it just starts running down my shoulders, and it starts going through my chest, starts going down my back, and my whole body starts feeling super strong. And I felt like I could just take off and run as fast as I wanted to, and I did. I ran all the way down the driveway and back. And I hadn't ran in nearly 2 years. But I had just so much energy in me. But it was just, it's hard to explain, but it's right there on paper. But in my heart, I believe that came through the awareness, mindfulness, meditations.
Yeah,
I believe I had that experience.
It's reconciling the body-soul dichotomy. Yeah, it's like the moment of moments.
Yeah, because it was 1 week after that, Bruce, that I totally healed up. It was like I had an experience of healing, what it was going to feel like before I healed a week later.
You must have had a lot of in common with Steve Ozanich, because it sounds like he went through something like that when he healed. It was like a life-changing event. And you can tell from this chapter you were working on it a long time and went through a lot of setbacks. And then through meditation, through mindfulness meditation and practices, you were finally rewarded.
Yes.
And that's when it went away, right?
Yes. 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 1 week after this section right here, because that night I thought it was gone, and I got up the next day and it was back. But 1 week later is when it left. So I was like, that was a great experience. Walt took out about a whole page of that story there. So I'm just hoping the rest of the story is somewhere else in there. Everybody knows Walt's my editor.
Well, so it really stands out here. I mean,
yeah, you can tell.
This is like a highlight of the chapter, isn't it?
Yeah. When I read that area, I was like, where's the rest of the story? You know, cause I'm not going to tell nobody the rest of the story right now, because it'd just spoil it. If he put it somewhere else, if he didn't, I'll eventually tell y'all as we go along. But
this is really a crux chapter, isn't it?
What does that word mean, crux?
A crux, like the crux of a problem. This is like
one leading to the other?
Yeah, this is like one of the central points in the book, right?
Yes.
Like the heart of it.
Yes, that was a big part of it. And I believe in my heart that, you know, we've just begun. We're in I feel like we're in the infancy of people healing from TMS healing. But because so many of us are having so much great, outcomes. I mean, pay attention and just think for a minute. How many books is being written on this right now of people that got healed and are just so happy and so full of, you know, enthusiasm that they want to go and spend a year or 2 years, or in Steve's case, 10 years writing a book about it. I mean, they're so full of enthusiasm for it. This is some unique stuff that we're talking about here, you know?
Yeah, well, it seems it all boils down to this one sentence. The truth is, TMS is a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
And that's what this all reveals, just yeah. how it works. It's a mechanism. Mm-hmm. And as long as it's impersonal and separate from you, then it's got the upper hand. But yeah. once you reconciled your mind and your body, yourself and your soul, then it no longer has that power over you. The mechanism is broken.
Yeah. I don't know if it's broken, I know what you're saying. It's more like it understands that you know now.
Yeah, you're
up on it. You can handle it. You know, in a way, you can handle it now, and it's going to let you handle it now because you've done showed it that you can handle all the emotional distress, the anxiety, and you're going to do all the soothing and everything it takes, the reaction watch, and everything it takes to get better. So when it decides and it thinks that you're not in trouble anymore, and of course that's through learning the knowledge penicillin, then it lets up, you know? And I'm just excited to hear who else is going to have these type of stories, you know, about this good feeling, you know, of like this healing just going on through their bodies.
Yeah, this healing is going to help lead us in the right direction toward emotional freedom and a beautiful life. You're awesome. Making some pretty high claims for this.
Oh, yeah.
I hope so.
Well, you know, everybody I've talked to so far, and I wrote the book, and everybody that speaks or talks or anything, their fingers point right back at them. Everything I wrote in the book, it came right out of my head. It was about me, you know. But it's a lot of things, Bruce, is universal, you know. And when you look on the TMS wiki and you look at the success stories, every one of those people have changed. Every one of them, it changed their lives. Every one of them is ready to get up and, you know, go sailing because they ain't been sailing in years. One guy, I remember I read a success story. He bought a boat and went sailing. He's been sailing, I think, for the last 2 years. But everybody opens up and they finally they finally start enjoying life. They finally start enjoying everything. It does change. It does change who you are.
Now, yeah, you can sit there and keeping you from succeeding, you can see that it's a real negative thing in your life, you know?
Yourself. I mean, I was already supposed to be the president of the United States back when I was 25 years old, the youngest man in the world to ever make it. You know, I had big dreams.
Dad wanted me to be Alexander the Great and conquer the world by the time I was 33.
Yeah.
I think every father wants that sort of thing.
Passes it on
the number one side.
But. And we all, universally, growing up our whole lives, we have these dreams. We have these goals. We have these wants. We have these needs that we want to do. And then all of a sudden, pain gets in the way. And then you're sitting there thinking, well, what just happened? It just took everything from me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you find out you can heal. And then when you do heal, it's like you're the light sitting on top of the hill that everybody can see, you know? You want to tell the world. There's nothing that can slow you down, especially if you're already some type of enthusiastic person. How could you ever be quiet about it, you know? For the rest of my life, I'm going to be telling people about this story, and the more I talk about it, the more I'm going to be able to reveal more of what really happened, you know? And as far as I'm concerned, I put it all in the book. But wow, you know, every time I talk about it, I get so excited. Just sitting here right now, I'm full of excitement just thinking about it. It's a beautiful thing.
Sounds like you've described why you wrote the book.
Yeah. And we want to let everybody, you know, get in on like working against the pain. I want to make sure everybody knows that. And what is working against the pain? I think we hit on some of it last week. What does it mean when you say working to the edge of the pain? You know, what does that mean? And like the facing, again, what is that facing? But we talked about the meditation, you know. I'm glad we got to talk about that. The MP3s. Listen to the MP3s all the time. Don't short yourself. Do everything you can do to make yourself better. Do what the people that healed did, and then you'll heal. You know, and that's basically, I added other stuff to it because I've been in the mind body my whole life. That's one of my main things that I love to study, and I just had a system, and I went with it, and it worked perfect. Don't get me wrong.
You've got to just keep going through the motions till you collide with it. You follow the program until finally you run into something that's been there all the time.
Can you rephrase that, please?
Well, do you just go through the motions of acceptance and reframing and meditation and breathing in the faith that you will eventually find, have this moment?
Well, I went through those motions knowing that I was going to have that moment. I went through those motions just so I could recondition myself. I understood what all these words meant when I read Dr. Sarnell's books. A lot of those words, the psychological words, you might not quite understand them when you first read his book and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I understood every bit of that. And when I was doing every bit of what Dr. Sarnell said to do, it just all clicked. It just all went right together. I didn't have to see if it was going to work. I just knew it was going to work, you know? That's the way I was the whole time.
So you had faith to begin with. You believe?
Oh, yeah.
Because you say that we must accept that hundreds of thousands have been healed of TMS repressed emotions in order to take our first steps toward becoming free of pain. So you start out with the belief, with the faith.
At the very beginning, you have to make sure that this system's right. Everybody has to check in to make sure that these guys ain't just a bunch of crazy people, you know, talking whatever, blowing hot smoke, have done heard it a million times before. I came on the TMS wiki site there. I saw success stories. I saw real human people that I could talk to. I started becoming friends through emails. I started writing posts. I started getting real friendships going with people that had already been through the same healing, you know, process that I wanted to do. And how could all those people not be telling me the truth, you know? And this was something where my goodness side really helped me out. It was, hey, man, this is the part that's really going to set me free. And that was the part where, when I say goodness, I also mean I use that as being good to myself too. Because there was a lot of years that I was real rough on myself. So I use the word goodest in a good way. That, you know, not being goodest to the part where, like, I do something and then somebody else doesn't appreciate it and then it hurts me. No, I use the word goodest now as in being good to me. Using self-compassion. And also, always be a gentleman, of course. But you know what I'm talking about.
So, Herbie, you would agree with Forrest that the success stories on the wiki are really important for getting people oriented in the right way with a sense of
the success stories are the most important part of the whole program. When you see these people here telling you their story and then you read that story, you know it's real. You can feel you can feel their passion. You can feel their hope. You can feel their happiness, their joy in it, you know? You can feel those emotions through those words. And I hadn't ever been to another site or anything else that had, you know, talked to me in that manner. This was real people that was talking to me, you know?
Offered that sort of hope and people's real voices. I think it's powerful stuff.
Wow, it blew me away.
Though I will say, always trying to be cautious in my words, I will say, you know, that's what worked for me. That's what changed my life. But I'm not going to say it's necessarily, I mean, different people. It's amazing, and one of my favorite things about being on the forum is seeing how different things work for different people. That's the thing that worked for me. I'm a die-hard Sarno, knowledge is the penicillin of this disorder type of guy, and it's all about accepting the diagnosis and reclaiming your life, and I think success stories, that's what did it for me.
Yes, I love the success stories, and that was a good question, Bruce. And if you don't mind, I do want to add something. I was wanting to add it while Walt was talking a while ago, but Walt talks about laughing a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that he had edited something in my chapter here, but this week, okay, this is all in the same frame. It's all about the same stuff. Just this week, I'm doing a study. I'm sitting there. I'm looking at that study. And in the study, now this is a scientific study, and I'm going to show it to y'all guys tomorrow or the next day or whatever. But say you're having a bad day or a bad thought pattern going, right? But while you're having that bad reaction or whatever going at that exact time, if you can make yourself laugh at that exact time, then it will have a type of a reconciliation process going. I just learned that now, and I just want to throw a little bit out there, and I'm saying this for Walt, because Walt talks about laughing a lot. And I was just, and I told y'all last week I was studying about laughing for the past few weeks, but the guy was actually talking about how people that right at the moment, like when they're really mad, if they could get themselves to laugh right then and there, that would actually, it would weaken the energy from that negative emotion. I thought that was pretty cool. I want to add that for Walt, you know, because he talks a lot about how he does his reframing through laughing, you know?
Yeah, I think he probably added this last sentence onto your chapter, didn't he? Didn't Walt add it?
He said, what
we need to accept and do it not with anger, but with peace. And then it's obvious Walt's hand here. And maybe with a good hearty laugh.
There you go. Yeah. That's where Walt put that in here. And I wanted to add that for Walt.
I thought so.
Yeah, I think people can tell the difference of where Walt comes in, you know. But he did a real good job with everything. But before it's getting on into the show here, and before we close the night out, guys, I would like to make sure that I run through some of the things that I had in this chapter. I'm just going to call out the name of it and go with it and then ask anybody if they got questions. Is that okay with y'all?
I think that sounds good, and thank you so much for being mindful of the time. The one other thing I'd love to do is if anyone that we've had some great listeners who've listened through the show, and I thought maybe some of them might have something that they have questions about or just want feedback or support on, and I just wanted to say that maybe after we do that we could just open it up and see if anyone has any questions to ask.
Right.
I also wanted to say that after the show on the forum, I'm going to post we talked in the chat room about the importance of getting feedback. So we can, it's always important to get feedback from your listeners to get a sense of what you like and what you don't like and how we should change. I often am the person pushing things along and trying to get things moving. That's what my gut says I should do, but I want to support that with data. So I thought it'd be helpful to collect that data. So on the forum, we will have a new thread which will allow you to give anonymous feedback on the podcast. What you like, what you didn't like, what we're doing just about right. From there, do you want to take it, Herbie?
Yeah. This is just going to be a few sentences. I'm going to say it was in the chapter, and it's not really nothing that I want to talk about. I just want to call a few sentences out. One of them is, you'd be surprised when you start the journal, you'll see how much blame you put on others and yourself to measure up. And again, that's just awareness. So we need to know awareness. We need, whether you process it through your thoughts or whatever, you need to understand how much pressure you're putting on yourself. Because when you can take that pressure off, you're taking a lot of, you're doing a lot right there. And I think Forrest and Bruce agree with me. When you can start taking a lot of that self-imposed pressure off from you through awareness or using the processing with awareness or journaling, then that would help a lot.
I think that's what the whole Goodist thing is about. And by the way, you mentioned Forrest and Bruce. I have to say, Bruce, you did an amazing job one time. It was like a very professional interview. I was very impressed. I wanted to just call you out there because I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, I think it's because I read the two chapters this morning back to back.
It's all fresh, huh?
Yeah, it's all fresh, and I took notes back to back.
Excellent. So you did a good job.
I was on top of it. Instead, when you
sure
spread
were.
It out, if you're enthusiastic about one chapter and you wait a while and you read the next chapter to get it done,
then
you create this discontinuity. So you're not all fresh then. Yeah, but I thought these two chapters were right on.
It came through. It came through. And I'm sorry. Speaking of discontinuities, I'm going to let you get back to doing your thing there, Hermie.
Well, yeah, let's ask some questions. Let's hear some questions here.
Okay, well, let me say this one more, and then we'll go into that. The approach was the same. A lot of times, you know, on TMS Wiki, people will come in, and they'll be new, of course, and they'll come in, and they'll say, well, you did that to heal your shoulder. What do I do to, you know, I think – the lady the other day asked about a sore throat or something. And basically in TMS healing, when we go to heal our bodies, it's all the same way. I mean, you do it through the same process, the same steps, whether it's allergies, whether it's the sore shoulder, the sore neck, sore back, that the process is the same. It's universal. I just wanted to get that out too because I had that in the chapter. But with that being said, We got a lot more here, but let's hear some questions. Let's hear some questions about something about soothing or the laughing reframe, as Walt likes to talk about laughing a lot, or working against the pain to the edge of the pain, facing meditation. We talked about a lot of stuff. So anybody got it? A word for the week, maybe your own story, maybe not a question about none of these stories, or maybe a question about one of these stories.
Well, and if no one jumps in, another thing that we could do is we could give you a little bit more time for that. And I think I muted someone in whose number ends with 6023, so I'm going to unmute you now if you want to jump in. If someone had called in.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was me. That was Carrie. When you just referenced the working towards the edge of the pain and all those, that aspect of things, because I missed a week, did you cover that previously?
Working to the edge of the pain?
Yeah.
No, I haven't covered it previously. It's in this chapter here. Do you got a question about that? Carrie?
No, actually, I have the book. And I haven't read the chapter, so maybe I'll just wait and read the chapter. And then if I have a question, I'll let you know. I did have a question, though, on where you say it's referenced so often about, like, catching your reactions. So when I catch my reaction to things or I catch triggers, then what do I do? Like, what am I – okay, so I identify something, then what am I –
Well, when you catch it the way I'd always done, Carrie, when I caught it, that's when I would maybe do my deep breathing right then and there, you know? Go ahead and get your deep breathing in, or maybe do your countdown with your relaxing meditation right then and there, while you're standing up. Because you just caught something that you usually react to, right? But now you're just trying to just be. You're not trying to react. Okay. You're just trying to be, okay? And that's where
because am I not repressing it if I'm not letting it out, am I repressing it then?
No, because you're facing it. You go ahead and feel the emotion. Feel the emotion in your body. And don't try to, you know, change that. Feel the emotion in your body. Go ahead and start doing your deep breathing and focus on just your deep breathing for the moment. And then you should start to feel a release if you focus on the emotion. Okay. And then that way you're not repressing it, but I think Forrest has something to add to that.
I do, and thank you for letting me jump in. I was going to say, I think that the the diminishment of repression, I think that just comes along all along the way. It just, you know, it just happens. You start working on the other things, and you'll get more in touch, and you'll be in a more, when Ryder refers to it as an allowing state. And so don't worry about that. As you do this journaling, as you go through the process, that'll just happen. And you just want to focus on living in a little bit more relaxed and joyful way. It's my take.
Yeah, like the word awareness, Carrie. The word awareness, just basically what Forrest said. If you just use the word awareness, awareness, mindfulness, awareness, then that is, you could read that, read something about that on the internet anywhere, and it'd sum up how to release through just soothing your body.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah, my new thing is know and let it go. Like I know.
I like that.
You know, I know how I feel, or I, you know, whatever, and then I just have to let it go without, you know, dwelling on it and toiling and worrying and everything else. So that's what I'm working on. So, okay. Okay. Thank you guys.
Yeah.
Awesome. Bruce, you want to add to that?
I don't think we covered it, but I think your advice about returning to full range of physical activities, is spot on in here. When you state that you need to pull back at the edge where the pain starts so that you have a successful physical experience. Like if you walk a quarter mile around the track and it doesn't hurt,
mm-hmm.
fine. But the tendency is to walk a quarter mile and then walk into the pain and then confront it and fight it and keep pushing on into the pain and
yeah.
resisting and buying into the TMS mechanism,
yeah.
as you say. Yeah, and what you want to do is to have a successful physical experience where you walk away okay. But the tendency with the personality, the perfectionist, is to drive on. You know, you get all of this feedback from pushing into
and
the
that
pain.
Was keeping me in pain because I was trying to push through the weightlifting while I was healing.
Yeah.
And it was only when I stopped trying to push myself for that perfectionist part of me through the weightlifting, and I just totally gave up all the exercises that my body went ahead and healed and got away from all that. And then
well,
I could go back and exercise the way I wanted.
That is the classic Nietzschean dialectic where the self pushes against the other in order to have a heightened sense of self-existence to validate your identity. And
yes.
so the fight, the struggle keeps going on like that when it's unnecessary. You're
correct.
Just reinforcing the process doing that, trying mm-hmm. to be the Superman.
Yeah. As soon as I learned that as soon as I start to feel that pain, I had to start, as I told before, I had to start off throwing horseshoes and I would throw them 10 feet. I would walk over, pick the horseshoe up, throw it 10 feet. And by the time I threw it 10 feet two or three times, I was plumb out of gas. I was plumb wore out. I couldn't even do it anymore if I wanted to. I was so bad out of shape at the time, from, you know, being bedridden for over a year. But when I started getting better at that time, I went ahead and pushed myself through the weightlifting and all that. And the pain stayed. And it was when I learned to work to the edge of the pain. And when I started mm-hmm. getting that little bit of pain, then stop, call it a day and come back and work out again. And that's how my muscles and my strength came back, was I would just work to the edge or to when the pain really started kind of kicking in, then I would move forth.
It's like Tina Turner says, I never do it nice and easy. I always
okay.
do it nice and rough. And you've got to stop that sort of thing. You got to learn to take it easy. And that's the hardest thing for a person with this kind of personality trait to
yes.
do.
Well said.
I think that.
Yeah, my trick. Oh.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, as I told, I don't know if I Forrest and I talked about it, and I'm sure Herbie and I did, but mine isn't a back pain. Mine is trigeminal neuralgia. So mine's kind of like a random cut and run kind of, like, you know, come in and shock you, stab you, zap you, and go. So for me, it's difficult to have that kind of positive progression of working up to the pain, because mine is so random and mine's in my face. So it's like when I eat, when I touch my face, when I blow my nose, when I drink something, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So for me, that parameter's a little harder. I've been kind of working on the Fred Amir premise of, you know, setting a goal. Like for me, I always eat on the left-hand side of my face or side of my mouth, or I would always drink out of straw. And it, you know, I guess it is a little bit of that, well, a lot of that challenging the pain that you're talking about of, okay, well, by the end of the week, I want to be able to eat on the right hand of my face or right side of my face, or I want to be able to drink without a straw. And with that, I kind of have to go with the pain, but almost just say, okay, I know this is TMS. I know this is TMS. You know, like I don't know how else to handle that. Any suggestions? I mean, I you guys are, I think, all coming from a back pain, so maybe you don't exactly know because you had a different experience. But any thoughts on that?
Well, like Herbie said, a lot of people believe that every single TMS pain is similar. I will say, you know, one of the symptoms that I've had, so I cured my, my main issue was, repetitive strain injuries in my fingers, thumb, shoulder, neck, back, and knee and foot. And then since then I've occasionally I'll get a little bit of, jaw pain diagnosed as TMJ. But it's facial pain. It's functional facial pain where they don't know where it's coming from. I'm going to be honest. I know it's TMS, and I have absolutely no doubt that it's TMS. But I do not hesitate to eat soft foods, because I know that whenever I do eat the hard food and I chew on it, it gets worse. And then all of a sudden I'm distracted. I'm thinking about nothing but my pain. So I'm like, well, okay, I know it's TMS. I got no time for this. I'm gonna eat soft foods. And I just continue on along my way, and it seems to work for me. You know, I'm not one who hesitates to break rules. But that's what allows me to get my mind off my pain. And I think that's different than what you're working for and, you know, what you've been trying so far. And I personally do believe that everybody has a journey. You know, you can learn what worked for other people, but in the end, TMS is a very personal thing. You got to find out what works for you. I don't know if that helps at all, but that's my experience.
Yeah. Well, and I'm struggling with trying to get off medication too. So it's like that heightens the pain. So I kind of have this, you know, it's like you don't want to do too much at once, but then on the other hand, you don't want to prohibit your progress. And I know I know it all goes back to, well, don't think too much or try too hard and just let it be. And
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is anyone able to jump in?
Sure, absolutely.
This is Jay from Kelly. You can hear me?
Hey, Jay. Yes, we can.
Carrie, if you're in the middle of this pain, what works for me, it is the divided mind. So one thing that I always thought was terrific about Sarno is that the subconscious is not included, and we just talk about the unconscious and the conscious mind. So whenever you feel that trigger, you can say, I know what you're doing, and I'm not going to stand for it.
Okay, thanks.
I believe that's from the mind-body prescription book.
Yeah, okay. He was big at yelling at the pain. Yeah.
I'm not as comfortable, like I'm comfortable like talking to myself, but you know, talking to my subconscious, but the whole concept of yelling at myself kind of after every